As always, subscribe and click the notification bell on our YouTube channel. Be active on our Facebook group, East Coast Distressed Note Investing, and be sure to go to our website for all your note investing tools, resources, and available assets. If you have any questions, email us at tradedesk@jkpholdings.com.
Hey everyone, Dave Putz from JKP Holdings. Good afternoon, Mr. Nathan Turner.
Hello, hello, how are you?
Good, man. Enjoying this Friday, rainy Friday afternoon in Jersey. Hopefully the weekend will be a little bit better than we're dealing with right now. How are things up in the Canada area?
Good. Yesterday was beautiful. Today's cooled off quite a bit. And then we've got snow forecast for Monday.
Snow? Yeah. Holy goodness.
Yeah. We're excited though, actually. We could see in the morning, I drive the kids to school and the sun comes up in the east and it just shines beautifully over on the Rocky Mountains. So when we get some fresh snow, you see the sun coming up and hitting the mountains with the fresh snow. Oh, it's absolutely breathtaking. Goodness.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what I got to say, I'm a little excited about talking to my wife before she traveled, that we get to see each other soon. Right?
We do. A couple of weeks coming up here.
Yeah. So we last webinar we had on was we had Bob Repass talk about the Note Expo and how, you know, getting around other note investors and note originators both is key to our business and networking and doing stuff. Is there a prime reason that, what do you look for? What's your goal when you go to those kind of conferences? What do you aim to do?
So for me, it's the two sides of the business. Number one, you need capital. So I'm always looking for new investors. And number two is notes. So I'm always looking for new notes. Anybody who's creating notes, anybody who's got notes for sale, I'm looking for.
So do you just go out and go, hey, I need to buy notes? How do you, so those people who are maybe first time going, how do you do that? Do you conversate? Do you have to get to know the person? How do you approach them sometimes?
Yeah. You know, you just kind of, hey, how's it going? What are you up to? What are you doing? You know, and you just kind of get into it. I don't know that I really have a formula necessarily, but I just chat.
Yeah, it's a relationship, right? Yeah. It's like going on a date. I think a lot of people are kind of concerned and scared to go there, but it's just talking, right? Get to know each other, ask questions. Cindy's saying she's excited to see us there. Yeah, Cindy, we're excited to see everyone. It's been a while. Yeah. Since it's been May, since DME.
Yeah. So yeah, it's been a little while. So good to get together.
We're doing a lot of stuff privately with originators and stuff like that. And in this relationship game, we're finding assets outside the traditional way of, you know, buying from hedge funds.
Yeah.
This relationship, actually, give the opportunity for it.
Yeah. I was just looking at a tape from a hedge fund the other day and, he's like, yeah, you know, are you looking for yield or are you looking for cash flow? And I was like, well, it's a little bit of both, but, you know, I have to meet targets on both sides. So he sent me this tape. He's like, have a look at these. I think these would be great for you. And he had strike prices on there. And I'm like, no, man, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like the prices you've got, that doesn't even, that barely breaks 10% as a yield. And I'm like, no, that's just not enough.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you know, it's tough, you know, to get those kind of yields and whatever. And I'm like, well, from you it is.
And it's scary, right? Because we lived and breathed on those kind of assets for so long.
Yeah.
And it's not that they went bad. The pricing just didn't do well, right? It just, there's more people in the space. I know one of our future calls will have Dave Polio from SN come on and talk about how there's a lot of new note investors who are bidding and just not doing anything correctly. We're looking forward to that call to kind of go through that branch part for some of the new people and originators to know the fact of how note buyers should be approaching you to buy assets. Yeah. Right. It's a different world.
Really good.
I'm looking forward to traveling down there. I'm getting in there Thursday night. So if you are getting there, feel free to stop and say hi to us. We'll be speaking. Then we're speaking Friday. So that's awesome.
Friday. We're on the same panel.
So that's good. That's awesome. Gene's saying hi as well. He'll be part of our group, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So this year, 2023, we made a mission to branch in more into the seller finance, owner finance world and get a better understanding of it.
Yeah.
We've done a lot from RMLOs to owner finance stuff and people who came from that world and kind of pulling them, right? So if you're an owner finance person, we're there to teach you how the note buyer thinks. And we're trying also teach you some of the right ways to originate.
Yeah.
But I think for us, you know, back to the roots of being a note buyer, this is crucial, right? We're all about cash flow and yield, and we'll buy non-performing as well. But the cash flow in an owner finance note right now is probably the best market to be in.
Right now, I think so. I think so. It's harder. And I had another conversation yesterday with an attorney talking about, we've been expecting a downturn. We've been expecting something to happen here since 2019. This is way overdue.
Yeah.
And then in speaking with this attorney yesterday, he was talking about how they're involved with a company that does auto loans, and defaults in auto loans are going up dramatically. Yeah. So, his words are, he goes, auto loans and then bankruptcies and then foreclosures. And so I think he's right. And I think, and that's been his experience. So we're at step one out of three.
I know that I showed a chart in our Facebook group a couple days ago regarding what the P&I payment compared to the home income were surpassed 2006 and seven.
Yeah.
That's scary. If anyone needs a chart, I'll put in the comments. We're streaming live on Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter, and it'll be recorded on YouTube. But if you need it, I can share with you. It's amazing where we're at. Yeah. It's scary. We've been waiting for the break, and we just don't know when and how it's going to come.
And it's interesting. One more thing I'll add to that is I think it was yesterday I saw a headline. I didn't go through and read the whole article, but it was talking about how the Fed was saying that inflation is still going up. So because it's still going up, there needs to be hurt. There needs to be a downturn in the economy before
that can
correct itself. So are interest rates going to continue to go up? It kind of sounds like it.
Yeah.
It's good news for us.
Yeah.
But I know that's not something everybody wants to hear.
I see the fact that the bankruptcy attorney from Steve on LinkedIn, he says that he watched the unemployment rate. So Steve, I'd be curious what you saw on your charts and what you've seen recently, just so we can get an idea of what that looks like, right? It's awesome. Good to see you, Sean, as well. So we want to bring on someone that really connected what we've done 2023, right? And our roots of being a note buyer. And when I've seen his posts of that, and what we found was we need someone that connected dots other than ourselves, who's done what we've done, understand what we understand, but also switch roles and understands the other side of it.
Yeah.
And has experience to kind of shoot the breeze, right? And networking in the space is always key to meet with people like-minded. It's awesome. I see BK slow, people making minimum payments. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate that over there on LinkedIn. It's awesome. So let's bring our guest in. He's sitting in the quote unquote green room. Mr. Wayne Garrett. How are you, my man?
I'm good, David. Nathan, how are you? Thanks for having me on the show.
Welcome, welcome. Very good. So Wayne, we've seen a lot of your stuff recently, and you're doing a lot of cool stuff. Can you share a little about how did you get into notes? What brought you into this space? Were you in real estate? Were you a landlord beforehand? Tell us a little about your history.
Okay, sure. Great. A lot of people in the note space, right, they start off, you were a landlord, you fix and flipper. That's not my trajectory at all. I was the W-2 guy. I'm formerly a engineer. I retired from that a few years ago. But I spent 30 years of my life working as an engineer. I grew up in the generation of graduate high school, go to college, get a degree, and get a good job.
Mm.
And I did that. What I found was in the 1990s, which is when I was really starting my engineering career, the world was changing. Manufacturing was changing. Mm-hmm. Jobs were moving to Mexico and offshore. And I went through periods where I would have a job and then they moved the plant to Mexico and I'd have to find another job. Mm-hmm. And this happened a few different times. So that taught me a few things. That taught me that, hey, maybe the W-2 thing is not the greatest thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it also taught me that I have to be adaptable. I have to be able to take the experience that I have and what I learned from this previous job and leverage it to get a better job. Mm. And that's what I always did. I always leveraged my experience to get a better job, even though they were saying, hey, we're shutting the doors and we're getting rid of people. I'd always leverage that and move myself up the chain. Mm. So that was good. But over time, it really kind of soured me to the W-2 trajectory. I'm like, I got to do something different. But I never knew what it was. I tried all kinds of things, Scott. I've been a wedding videographer. I flew drones. Wow. I've done all kinds of different things trying to make different income. And a lot of that's transactional income.
Sure.
So transactional income is good, but the problem is if you get out of your W-2 job and you get into something else that's transactional, you've built yourself a human-powered helicopter, and as soon as you stop pedaling, well, you come right back down. Mm-hmm. So I went down this path for a while, and also when I was thinking about this, you guys remember the movie that came out in 1999, Office Space?
Yes. Yeah.
That movie really spoke to me, because when I saw the characters in that movie, I'm like, oh, that's me. That's, I don't want to live in a cubicle. This existence is terrible. But I didn't know what else to do. Mm. And it wasn't until fast forward through several years of being discontent, but just continuing, because again, when you have a good paying job, you tend to get in a groove and had money to pay the bills, had money to... Sure. Have a nice house, have nice cars. My wife is a career W-2 person. She's got a really good career too. She works in the medical field. And so between the both of us, for a long time, we were dinks, dual income, no kids. Mm-hmm. So we were just living a nice life. We were traveling and buying nice cars and house and just, but spending everything, not really investing, just living life and spending. Well, then you have a life event. So back toward the end of 2018, we had that life event. My wife lost her career job. She had been in one company for about 26 years, and they did a massive round of layoffs in the medical, because you know medical has gone through some changes lately. She lost her job. And so that opened our eyes to, we need to do something different. So we started looking at traditional real estate investing.
Okay.
So that's the path we started down. What I found was, being an engineer, I looked at getting into rental property. That's one of the things that people often start off, right? Mm-hmm. Rental property.
Yeah. Sure.
The problem is that I couldn't make the spreadsheet and the checking account match. The numbers didn't add up and didn't make sense to me. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm spending all this money, all this effort, time and resources, and I'm going to get maybe $200 a month.
Yeah.
And then once the tenant moves out, I could be looking at a $10,000 make ready for the next tenant, depending on what damage was done, what needs to be done to the house. Mm-hmm. So those numbers just didn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. The same with a lot of other things in traditional real estate. In that time in the market, I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, very, very competitive. When you start studying traditional real estate, what do they tell you? 70% of ARV is what your goal is for investing. But when you start trying to apply that, you very quickly realize that seasoned real estate investors, that's not what they're doing. No. They're coming in at 90, 91, 92 maybe. But it's because a lot of times they have a machine. They already know, they have agreements with contractors. They can walk into a house and in 5 minutes, they know what it's going to cost them to turn that house, because they already have the relationships and the machinery built.
Sure.
If it's a new person coming in, you can't compete with that. I figured out real quick, you can't compete with that. So I'm just racking my brains. What am I going to do? And I was attending RIAs, meeting people, getting out there. There was a guy, I don't know if you guys have heard of him, Tom Henderson. Are you familiar with him?
We have had him on the show.
Yeah. Tom Henderson came to a RIA that I was attending. And that's where I first got the interest in notes. The first time I'd ever heard of note investing.
Yeah.
But I didn't quite know how to apply it. It seemed like, how do you really apply this? And so I just kind of bookmarked that. And I told my wife about it. And she thought it was interesting too. She's like, okay, we'll bookmark that. And I continued down the path of, you know, marketing for pre-foreclosures. And again, all the stuff you do in traditional real estate while I'm still doing my engineering career. Then comes along Eddie Speed. Mm-hmm. Went to a one-day class. I saw a promo for Eddie Speed's Note School. So I said, let me go try to do that. Went to a one-day class. I liked the messaging. And for some reason, Eddie seems to have a way of taking, I say it like this, Eddie takes the cookies and he puts them on the bottom shelf. He makes note investing much easier to understand. I don't know why, it's just the way he presents the material. Mm-hmm. Clicked with me. So I went to a three-day class, and then that turned into be, you know, signing on as a student. And from there, I just got really involved. We decided, and at the same time, my wife and I had a plan. We figured out along the way that trying to be an investor and doing a full-time W-2 job is very difficult.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so we had a plan. We decided, let's do this. Let's downsize our expenses and make it to where we can live off one income, which would be hers. Mm-hmm. And so we did that. We planned this out over about a year and a half. And then when Note School came along, it was perfect because we decided, okay, I'm just going to become a full-time note guy. I'm going to retire from engineering, and I'm just going to dedicate all the resources into that. We both had retirement accounts. I had a string of retirement accounts from being at this job and this job, because every job I had a 401k.
Right.
And so that left me with a string of 401ks, as she had one. She had a couple of 401ks too. So then we started again learning about self-directed IRAs. I remember when I first learned about a self-directed IRA, that was like, what?
You mean for those who are not familiar with a self-directed IRA, just give a basic example of what it looks like.
Quick, how's that go?
Well, so basically, it's the ability to control what you invest in, instead of giving your money to a third party and crossing your fingers that they're actually going to do something with it and not just lose it all.
So people who are in jobs have 401ks, right? People outside the company may have IRAs, but they don't realize that you can actually take the IRA and not be in the stock market.
Exactly.
You can go into real estate, you can buy notes, you get all the kind of things. So then you're self-directing your retirement account, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you're also assuming the risk along with that.
Yeah.
There's always, when you're doing investments, there's always some risk of a loss. But our philosophy was, well, look, if you watch your 401k over a period of time, they lose your money too. When stocks take a dip, they lose your money, and it takes forever for it to climb back and recover.
Yeah.
You know, because back in 2008, I remember that happened to my in-laws. They're very close to retirement. And if your retirement accounts take a 20 or 30% hit,
ouch,
that put a lot of people back to either they had to extend out their retirement, they couldn't retire, or they had to come out of retirement and start working again. So looking at that, thinking, okay, we can manage this too. Let's just put our own destiny in our own hands and go forward with that. So I'm involved with Note School. I'm being a student, doing the things that Eddie says do, and just continuing to learn.
So share about when you first discovered notes. How fast did you jump into buying your first? How did that process go for you?
And what attracted you? That's the other thing I'm curious about. Why was that?
No, the reason notes were really attractive is so Eddie really explained it to a point where you start catching the vision, you start going into, and I'll you know, not to get too far in the weeds, but when you, all the different potentials that you could do with a note, selling a partial, mm-hmm. pledging the note, all these different things that I never really knew or thought of that existed, that just gives you more opportunities. Plus, I like the fact of no tenants and no toilets.
Ooh, I like that.
That was probably the biggest thing, the first thing that stuck out to me is, so you mean I actually get real cash flow, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. and I'm not dealing with tenants and toilets, and I can hire third-party servicing to manage all this activity for me, and it's a flat fee. Because as you guys all know, if you have a rental house and you're dealing with a property manager, they take a percentage.
Sure. Right.
It's not a flat fee. It's a percentage.
Right.
I didn't like that. I like the flat fee much better.
Yeah.
So tell us about your
a lot of people coming from the landlord space. That's that's a huge draw. Wait, I don't have to fix a toilet anymore?
We did it. We've been there, right? I didn't jump straight to the notes. I was a landlord first because that's the simplest way to get into real estate. You have a loan from a bank. Yeah. You have a tenant. They pay more than your mortgage payment. And you're great.
Yeah.
And that's all. Anybody normally, when people first get into real estate, you can sell a house, you can rent a house. That's pretty much all we know.
Right.
Those are the options. You can rent it or sell it. And then same with you, and I got into notes, I'm like, wait a second, I can do all of these other things. Plus I still have those two options available to me. Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, exactly. And
it's a huge box up, this brand new world of wait a minute. And the idea of becoming the bank, right? Our pitch line.
Exactly. And the great thing is you don't have to come through the traditional real estate world to do that. You can do it. I know my path is opposite from most people, but that's okay. That tends to be what happens to me in life with everything. I tend to do things or I get to the same destination as a lot of people. I just get there differently.
So we talked earlier before we brought you on about seller finance. And the knowledge and experience that a lot of seller finance people who are listening to us who are not sure about buying notes, but they're originating notes. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about your experience with seller finance notes and how that is a replacement for the banking system right now.
Well, so my experience of seller finance notes is a few different things. Because after you've been in the note business for a few years and you've looked at notes, people, I buy notes, sell notes, and I've brokered notes, you see different qualities of notes. You mm-hmm. start seeing the things that make a note more valuable than other things. And especially when you're part of a community of note investors like Note School, you are able to actually, it gives you a standard because you don't know what is good and what is bad when you first get into the note business. It just, everything kind of looks like gravy at first because it's not tenants and toilets. You're like, oh, it's a $200 P&I is great because it's not tenants and toilets. Oh, well, not necessarily. A $200 P&I is not going to get you a lot of velocity.
Yeah.
So you start learning that certain people, they go out and they create notes that aren't great. Like a lot of times I see these young guys that go out and they get into notes. Maybe they were in wholesaling or they were in fix and flipping. But they'll obtain a house. Maybe it's a house out in the country. They got it cheap. Mm-hmm. They were able to find, they didn't do anything to the house. They were able to find a borrower to put in the house as is without doing anything to it. They got enough money on the down payment to cover what they have into it. And now they have a 30-year note and they're collecting payments. Mm. But by the way, they didn't really vet the borrower. They just found somebody with the down payment. Mm. So you don't necessarily have a good borrower. And in the end, as you guys know, that doesn't yield a very good note. It's not a note that's, when you want to sell that note, that's not a note that true investors want to buy. Right. And if they are going to buy it, it's going to be heavily, heavily discounted.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That takes me right back 2009 when I was first creating notes and I didn't even know they were called notes, but that we were doing that, selling it on terms and they were terrible. They were terrible borrowers. The paperwork was really substandard, but
right. But what I've learned through Note School is you want your paper to look as close to bank paper as you can possibly get. You want the underwriting. I love the fact if I come across a note that the borrower is paying the servicing fee fantastic. I love that because that just makes your yield go up as the note investor.
Yeah, exactly.
All of these things that actually a well-vetted borrower, nice asset. If I'm going to sell a partial, I don't want a Beverly Hillbilly house that's out in the country that looks all run down. That's not what I want to show to my partial investor, because your partial investor is just a passive person, right? Or it's supposed to. You don't want to show them a shack and say, well, this is what's backing up your money. You want to show them it doesn't have to be an expensive house. It just has to look like a decent house that you could actually see someone living in and paying for 30 years.
Sure.
So what was your learning curve like? Like, you know, I know you got into note school and that's a fantastic education program.
Yeah.
What was like coming from, you know, corporate America into landlording and just kind of into some basic real estate stuff? How did you go from there to there? And what was that like? Was that fire hose kind of level stuff? Or how did that go?
Oh, it's completely fire hose. Everything's new. All the terminology is different than what I'm used to. The paperwork's different from what I'm used to. The math is different from what I'm used to. Every single aspect is completely different than what I'm used to. So much so that you have to completely rewire, or at least I did. I had to completely rewire my brain and my way of thinking. In fact, you guys know a guy by the name of Pat Precourt?
I don't.
Have you ever heard of Pat Precourt? He's a big mindset guy that we talk about a lot in note school.
Okay.
And one of the sayings that sticks out to me still to this day that he said is, in order to do something that you've never done, you must become someone you've never been.
Yes, I've heard that saying before. Absolutely.
And that rings so true. If you're trying to do, because I didn't do a pivot. I did a 180. Mm-hmm. I've completely burned the ships as far as engineering. I'm not going back to that world.
Yeah.
This is my life. I'm in the note investing world. This is who I am now. So to get there.
But what part of your W-2 helped you become a note buyer? Was there a part of the W-2 that kind of prepared you for the note buying space that you pulled in?
It's hard to identify one specific thing. I think it's just a combination of life experience. Okay. And I pull in just life experience whenever I can, because everybody has different backgrounds. So you use your background and experience, whatever that looks like. I did a lot. Part of my role as an engineer, because people hear engineer and they think you're a numbers geek, right? I think all I did was sit behind a desk and do calculus all day. And that's not true. There's so many different kinds of engineering jobs out there.
Yeah.
And one of the things I did in my engineering job was a lot of auditing auditing of vendors. So I would fly to France. I would fly to Spain. I would fly to Milwaukee, wherever the vendor was. And I'd walk into their facility and I'd spend 2 or 3 days there and I would audit every aspect of their facility. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of things you have to be able to kind of pick up on quickly in order to be able to comprehend, are they following their procedures? Are they following their work instructions? Are they following our instructions? We're the customer and we send purchase orders to these guys. Are they following our purchase order? You have to be able to go into a company and figure all that stuff out very quickly and assemble all this into a report. You had to meet with executives. So there's just a lot of life experience.
Yeah.
I've just kind of folded into what I'm doing, being able to just talk, you know, on webinars with you guys and not be shy, because you can't be shy in this business. You guys talk about it's relational, right?
Yeah.
Relational is it's so important. You have to build relationships in this business.
So we all have our stuff that we're not good at in this space, right? Tell us a little bit how you overcame some of the struggles you had. And what have you done to, you know, either get better at that struggle or done all the things to overcome it?
Sure. I think one of the struggles is putting yourself out there, being on webinars, putting yourself in front of a camera, being able to say what you think and have some confidence behind it. I think that's such a tricky thing. And I think it's intimidates a lot of people.
Mm.
So one of the things I did that's been really key for the last couple of years of helping me through that is I joined a Toastmasters club.
Ooh.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with Toastmasters.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if anyone out there listening is not, go to Toastmasters.org, and it's a communications club. They have many clubs that are virtual. Since COVID, a lot of clubs have become virtual. Mm-hmm. Some clubs are hybrid. They do in-person and Zoom. And then some are in-person only. But find a club that speaks to you that you can get involved with, and you learn to speak in front of people. You learn to write speeches and then give those speeches in front of a group of people. And then you also learn to take criticism, because part of it is called an evaluation. So once you give a speech, you're given an evaluation. Now, it's a constructive evaluation. So they'll tell you, here's what you did great, and here's what you could accelerate at or do better at. And then maybe here's something you could work on in the future, and end it with something, again, nice, kind of make it a sandwich, an evaluation sandwich. And it teaches you to be able to take a certain amount of criticism.
Sure. And
when you look at comments on anything that you've done, you can real quickly weed out the ones who are just making nasty comments to be mean.
Yeah. And
those who are making comments that maybe will actually benefit you. And it's something that's like, okay, that's a good point. I need to look at maybe tweaking that and do better next time.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I'd say that Toastmaster was probably the biggest thing. And then the next biggest thing is working the financial calculator. I remember financial calculator used to intimidate me so much. But after a while, I found that as a weakness. And I kind of have the mentality that when I find things about myself that are weaknesses, I lean into that. A lot of times,
but
a lot of times people make a mistake, I think, of they take that weakness and they set it off on the shelf somewhere, and then I'll deal with that weakness later.
Or hide it, right? Put it in the closet and say the boogeyman, put them in the boogeyman in the closet. I don't want to deal with it because I'm scared of it, right?
Right. But it will always be a weakness until you fix it. Until you address it head on and make it a strength, it'll always be a weakness.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things we thought before we got on is sometimes your surrounding is not clear, right? And we brought the fact that you have a great background. So those people who are looking to go on camera, we encourage you to go on camera. I've seen plenty of your videos, right? And people are scared to do that. We can overcome those kind of things by different technology skills and just doing it and feeling better about it.
Well, yeah.
You don't even necessarily need to be on actual camera. You can narrate a PowerPoint video or something like that. Like,
yeah,
right.
There's ways around. You can figure it out. Start
doing something.
Yeah.
It's like a GPS. Have you ever been sitting in the parking lot of Target or Walmart or someplace that you're unfamiliar with and you want to get home, and you put your home address into the GPS? If you're sitting in a parking lot, does the GPS tell you where to go yet? It doesn't. It just shows the parking lot, and it kind of has no idea where you are. It can't really pick you up until you pull onto a street, any street. It doesn't matter. Right. Once you pull onto that street, the GPS immediately picks you up, and then it tells you, oh, you need to turn around, or you need to make a right-hand turn, and then it can start giving you course corrections.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel the same way about our entrepreneurial adventures. Is you have to take a path. You have to take some action. Mm-hmm. If you want to be on camera, just be on camera. You'll start figuring out what works and what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. We still screw up, right? We've been doing it for a long time.
I've been tweaking my setup for so long. I mean, what you guys are seeing with my background and everything. I've tweaked this over and over and over.
Yeah.
But the problem is if you don't start, like you're saying, you'll never get better, right? Yeah. If we keep putting it off and say, well, you know, I don't have the best setup, but if you go back to our first video recordings, they're terrible. But without them, we would never build on to where we're at. In a year from now, we'll be even better again. Exactly. You're always achieving. So marketing is something I think all note buyers struggle with. Mm-hmm. What have you done to overcome marketing and things that take a lot of time and energy? What have you done to overcome those?
I think the hardest thing that was for me to do that I finally did was hire a VA.
Mm.
Finding somebody that's a competent VA. It's not just hiring any VA either. You have to find somebody that is competent in the creative area. Because like we said before we went live, yeah. A lot of times being note investors, real estate investors, being creative on Facebook is you don't have the bandwidth. You don't have the time because that's a whole nother set of software that you have to learn.
Yeah.
To do those creative things. And it's so much easier to pay somebody to do those for you. You create the content. So like with my channels, I create the content and then my VA sends me, what he's planning to post, and I review it and make sure that all the wording's accurate. I'm good with everything. And it's building, I've built a relationship with this guy where it's much more seamless. It was a lot of work at first, and as time has gone, it's getting to where now I could shoot a video and send it to him, and a couple of 3 hours later he shoots it back to me. I look at it. This is what we're going to post today. Great, go with it. And so it just makes it so much more streamlined and easy to be able to do that.
Yeah, awesome.
So we're looking forward to Node Expo, right, coming up.
Oh yeah.
And what are some advice you can give people who are looking to attend Node Expo? What would you say how do you make the most out of the conference coming up? Because Node Expo is connected to Node School. It's a branch of it. For those who may be brand new, or how can they make the most of it? Because we always talk about you're spending time and money, time away from your family and money to go down to this place and network. How can you get the most out of it?
I think to get the most out of it would be one, look at the schedule and look at things that interest you on the schedule of speakers. What topics are coming up that are topics that you're really interested in? That's good. The next thing is there is a Node Expo app. So download that app, because that's a way that you can actually connect with people even in your general vicinity. I love the app because you could just connect with everyone that's at Node School. You can see everybody. You can start making those connections. But then once you make connections, start trying to find people that you have, maybe you feel like you have some commonality with, that you can build a relationship. The biggest mistake I see people make, you introduce yourself to somebody, you talk for 5 minutes. If they don't see an immediate way that they can get value out of you,
true,
they bump onto the next person. Well, I don't really see a way I can make a deal with you. I got to get going. And they just, you don't hear from them again. Instead of, like you said earlier, dating the person, trying to get to know the person, there may not be an apparent deal right away. People act like, well, if I can't see a deal in this relationship in the first 20 minutes, I'm out. And I think especially if you're a newer person and you don't have a huge network already and you're trying to build that network, then start with making friends. Start with figuring out how can you bring value to somebody. Don't look at it as, well, what can they do for me? Look at it as, okay, what do I have? How can I bring value to somebody? Yeah. And it depends on the person. It varies.
Yeah.
But it's the relationship. It's making friends with people.
Yeah. I remember we've talked about this before a little bit, but I remember my very first Node conference in 2009, and my goal was to give away 20 business cards.
Mm-hmm.
Just that, just to put myself out there. And that was kind of that, my version of that, and just forcing myself to get to know people.
That's really become tough though too, hasn't it? Because business cards have kind of gone away. It's kind of out of fashion now.
I still use them. I still think they're cool.
I do too, but I can't tell you how many times I hand out a card and the person I'm handing one to, they don't have any to hand back.
Or they never reach out to you. I'm shocked by how many times I've given out my cards and how many little emails I get the next week from the people. It's a huge networking, right? So let's shift gears for a second. Seller financing. What are some deals you've come across that got into that either been crazier or understandable, or what are some of the successes or failures you've had with seller financing?
No, sure. Well, so I've had good success in buying performing notes. And a lot of times what people wonder is, well, if I'm going to get into notes, what area do I want to get into? Do I want to get into NPLs, non-performing, or do I want to do creative stuff? And hey, if you're already somebody that does fix and flip, and you're already in heavily into the real estate world, and you're turning a lot of houses, creative is always a good option. But if you're not in that, if you're just getting into notes and you're not heavily invested in real estate already, then you're looking at what, non-performing or performing. And what I've always told people is, look, if you buy enough performing notes, you will eventually have a non-performing note to work on. So you don't have to specifically dive into non-performing.
Well said.
And I figured this out the hard way.
Yeah.
I bought enough performing notes, but the great thing about it is I'll give you a plus and minus. So the plus for me is the velocity of cash flow. What people who invest in rental properties don't realize, you're getting back that small amount of rent every month, but you've got all this capital tied up in the asset. Mm-hmm. And the only way you're going to get that capital out is to leverage your way out of it.
Sure. Right.
Not so with a note. As you start buying your notes and you start receiving that cash flow, you're receiving what? Principal and interest back.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So you have this velocity of money. You build up your pool of money, you go buy another note. And then that adds to the stack. The key is not buying one note, just like the key with rental properties is not owning one house. If you're going to do rental, own 20, 30, 40. Well, the same with notes. If you want to make real cash flow in notes, you need to, you know, plan on owning 30, 40, 50 notes. Keep building your note empire, because that's really gets the velocity. Before you know it, you're buying $150,000 note a month. You've got the money. And it just keeps churning. So that is the positive for me, realizing that. The downside, I'll share a downside, is a lot of new people, they want to do small deals.
Yep.
And I had a small IRA. I had this little IRA that had like $18,000 into it. I'm thinking, what can I do with this? Let me get into a small note. I'll buy a small non-performing note, and that'll be fine.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. What, and again, this was earlier in my investing career, so I didn't know then what I know now. If you invest in a small note that's tied to a low value asset, it's most likely it has a low value borrower attached to that low value asset.
Yes.
And this happened to be in Ohio. Mm-hmm.
What part of Ohio? We all started there.
Warren.
Okay.
Warren, yeah. Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So we take the deed. Well, I took the house back, deed in lieu. Mm-hmm. Instead of foreclosing, got the house back, deed in lieu. However, the city had a notice posted on it, and the house had been condemned.
Ouch.
Yeah, the house had been condemned. So what I didn't realize back then was that the borrower had stopped living in the house and had let the house backslide. So the house was in terrible condition. Yeah. The city of Warren was, you know, very much trying to get rid of these zombie houses. They don't want a lot of zombie houses in their town. So they had a thing on there saying, hey, the house is condemned. Here's all the work that it needs. And you need to give us a $15,000 surety bond.
Yeah.
And at the time, I didn't know what a surety bond was.
Like, are you sure? I don't need to give a surety.
Yeah, I'm like, what's a surety bond? Real quick, it's an insurance policy that you're going to do all this work. You even have to do it with an insurance company. You have to go to Allstate or certain insurance companies that do these, that issue these, and then you pay $15,000. Well, guess what? I did this out of a small IRA. I didn't have $15,000 to do a surety bond.
Yep.
So that wasn't an option. And then I find out that the BPO that I had, you ever hear stories about, well, the house I had was on the wrong side of the tracks and the value wasn't what it was supposed to be?
Yeah. Well,
that happened to this house. Had this house been about 1 mile north of its current location, the BPO values would have been good. Because guess what? That's the comps they used, because those were the only sold comps they had to use was in the better part of town.
Yeah.
So my house that I thought was worth $65,000-$70,000 was really worth about $20,000-$25,000 in great shape, not in condemned shape. So it really backed me into a corner.
Yes.
So the only option was, okay, I've just got to unload this house. I don't have the money to fix it. Yep. This wasn't the plan. I gotta eject this thing. Well, now you're trying to eject this thing. So I'm on Facebook Marketplace and I'm trying to get this thing sold. But you also have ticking clock.
Yeah.
Because the city's saying, hey, we're going to tear this thing down. If you don't get us the surety bond, if you don't show us something that you're going to do something, this thing's getting leveled. Mm-hmm. Well, I found out that for some reason, investors aren't really interested in houses that are about to be leveled. I don't know why, but they didn't want to buy it. So I ended up taking a loss on the house because I had to sell it for what I could get out of it, mm-hmm. which was less than what I paid for the note. So that was a loss that I took, but it was also a very valuable lesson in the importance of the collateral and making sure that the collateral is what you think it is, where you think it is.
Yeah.
And small value deals. Hey, there's nothing wrong with a small value deal. Look, if I had it to do over again and I only had $18,000 to spend and I'm going to buy a note, I would either buy a partial that was tied to a good asset, or you could buy the tail end of a note that was still tied to a good asset. Find something that's $100,000 house or better.
But we've talked before about on the show is that people go to college and spend all this money to get education and get a degree, right? And they walk out with no income from it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the best thing to do here is go to school. You spend a little money, you learn the whole lesson about investing for a small amount of money. And in college, you don't get that money back, right? The only way to get that money back is to use the knowledge you gained from that deal on another deal and learn from it. So sometimes it's, you know, you can play it safer and go that route, which is great. But on the flip side, the other way of doing it is, did I go to school? And some people say, I'd rather do that than go to some kind of training programs, right? Mm-hmm. But always think about every deal is an investment in education as well as in money.
I agree. And I'd say if you financially can do both, if you can do professional training with somebody like Eddie or even somebody else, I would suggest doing that. But just know that doing that training does not mean that you won't learn the kind of lessons I've learned. It doesn't mean, because it still will happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just how life works. You do the best you can with the knowledge and experience you have at the time. And you just have to go through some hard knocks sometimes to learn those lessons. But I'm such a much better investor now, much wiser than I was before, because I went through that experience.
And yeah, Polio jumped in here and said, your first loss is your best loss. Polio, appreciate that, man. That's awesome. Well said.
Yeah.
And it happens to everybody. It, just because you lost some money on a deal does not make you special. Everybody's done it.
I've lost.
It's a good emotional roller coaster too. Because you feel like such a fool when it happens. You're like, oh my gosh.
And I think people lose the fact that they don't feel like they're a professional anymore. Like, well, I must not be good at this. I can't help anyone because I lost.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And what you realize is that we've all lost. We've all made mistakes. Things that we knew, didn't know, were a checklist that we skipped an item and said, no big deal. And then we look back going, holy crap. So don't think of a loss as something that you now are less of an investor. It's nothing to do with being less of an investor. Right. It's just the course of investing. And you can share that experience. We encourage you. We've been in situations where we had a new rookie investor go through something we've never been through. Mm-hmm. And sharing that experience and putting yourself out there is crucial in the space.
Mm-hmm. And we're all learning together. And you get in a room with note investors. Mario said earlier here, we're all a bunch of introverts, but you know what? You get in a room with a bunch of note investors and there's just going to be stories and stories and stories and stories.
Yeah.
And we learn from each other.
That's a funny thing too. You say introvert, I'm very much an introvert. I have to force myself to do all of this, like get on webinars and get in front of people. It's not my natural wiring. I could be left out. I can sit at home all day by myself, not talk to anyone, and be fine.
Oh, that's my wife. Oh, my Lord.
Not forever. Right? I mean, I still like being sociable.
Yes.
But the interesting thing is, so an introvert getting out and being around people is a draining activity, mm-hmm. not an energizing activity.
I think I'm maybe a recovering introvert. I can go out and I can feel energized, but I sure value my alone time.
Yeah. Yeah. When you have your downtime, because a lot of times you come back from the end of the day, if you've been doing a lot, maybe you've spoken in front of a group of people, you've been on stage, you've been on webinars, or you've just talked to a lot of people at a conference. At the end of the day, you're just exhausted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Paul Lewis said, if you ever bought stock that never went down, we've all done it, right? So one of the things you said before about marketing is key on this thing, because we've all put stuff out there, and VAs is such an interesting field, because, you know, we've done a webinar on, I think we've done a webinar, we did a private call with it, and VAs is something that people get lost on, hard to understand. And again, sharing and asking questions to others. Hey, have you found a VA? What did you ask of the VA? What did you look at? Where'd you find them? Post these in the Facebook groups or in whatever form you're in, right? We have our East Coast, the JKP group, but post and find out what other people have used. Because what we found in our private call on a weekly call is we don't know what each other have used or not used or succeeded or failed at unless we share.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crucial, because when we make a mistake, we want to make sure everyone learns from it. And I learn from everyone else as well. So yeah, absolutely. It's not only about losing a business, but maybe you tried a service that didn't work. Maybe a system that just didn't fit. And someone else has a system. And we talk about postcarding and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Learning a system is always crucial.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
So let's finalize with some stuff. You've gone from W-2, you're doing seller finance paper, you're buying stuff, you're making mistakes, you're putting yourself out there in marketing. If you look back 10 years ago, would you have seen where you're at today?
No. No way. I was in drone mode. I was a W-2 drone. I was, you know, go to work, work all day, come home, spend time with the family, go to sleep, and do it all over again. It was just that cycle. And never would I have thought that I'm doing this, which is, I think, part of the beauty, because what excites me now is who am I going to be in 10 years?
Yeah.
Who am I going to be in 5 years? That's exciting to me, because I feel like I feel free. I feel like I'm free to explore, and I'm free to change my mindset and to learn, grow, and be different. I'm not boxed in. If you're a W-2 guy, you're boxed in. Yeah. They tell you who you're going to be.
Yes.
They really do. And they kind of put a thumb on you and say, well, your value is X. That's your value is X, whatever that dollar amount is. Whereas in this world, you set your worth. You set your dollar.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
Which I love, that the prospect of, hey, 5-10 years, I can 10x, 20x what I've got going on.
Yeah.
The only one that limits me is me. I'm the limiting factor, is how hard do I want to lean in and push?
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. My wife and I have those discussions all the time, where we're so grateful where we are, and we're looking forward to 5-10 years from now. And we've got plans, man.
Yeah.
Good plans.
Yeah.
If you have nothing to aim at, you're hit every time. So you got to have plans, got to have goals. Even if you adjust them as you go along, you got to know where you're going.
Yeah,
for sure.
So we like to wrap up and check in with all of our guests, all of our experts, and find out what your crystal ball prediction is. What do you see happening in the next, say, 12, 24 months? Where do you see the market going? What are we in for?
Well, I would say that I think we're going to see interest rates continue to climb because they're continuing, like you guys were saying earlier, there's not enough pain, right? The Fed is saying, we're not seeing enough blood in the street yet. We need more blood. Mm-hmm. So we're going to make sure that we get that blood. So we're going to just keep cranking the dial up. So I think we're going to see the next Fed meeting, we're going to see another rise in interest rates. And I think it's probably going to level off for a period of time. They're probably going to kind of see some of the stuff I've been listening to and some of the stuff I've seen on YouTube. They talk about Christmas time being something that they watch because Christmas time is the pulse of the consumer. Mm-hmm. And how good are sales for all the retail places for Christmas? If sales are way, way down, they know the consumer's hurting. If sales are not down, then the consumer's not hurting. So it'd be better for us if we faked out the Fed and we couldn't buy stuff for a while and then they'd lower interest rates. But since people keep buying, I mean, you know, the F-150 is $100,000 and people still keep buying them. I don't know why, but they do.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see those interest rates continue to go up. But then it also, in the seller finance world, it works in our favor, right?
Sure.
Because now you're going to start seeing more foreclosures come up. You're going to see more non-performing loans. These banks are going to have to, you know, they're going to do so much downgrading of that. Eventually, they're going to have to cut those assets loose. So that's going to put more non-performing loans into the system. Once that starts happening, then you're going to see better pricing on non-performing loans. I know we didn't get into that, but I personally think the pricing on non-performing loans is still high.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I'd like to see that come down, especially when I hear guys like you talk about the good old days and what you used to pay for non-performing loans in the last cycle. I'm like, where are those? I want those.
Yeah. Buying every like 35 cents, 40 cents.
Yeah, I want those.
I'm sure Polio is looking over there going, they aren't coming back. Right, Polio?
Yeah. Come on.
Well, I think part of that reason is there's so many more people in the space. Yeah. Right. You know, when we got started, there wasn't a lot of people doing this.
Right.
And a lot of it's being pushed up by a lot of newer people who are just bidding crazy just to win assets. So sorry, God.
Yeah, no, that is perfectly reasonable. You have a lot of new people. And I didn't, 3-4 years ago, I didn't know what I know today. Yeah. And I wasn't as diligent as I am today.
Yeah.
And I see new people come in jonesing for a deal. I mean, literally just jonesing. It's like, I got to get a deal. I got to feel like I'm in the business. I got to get a deal. And it's just like with buying things. People, they buy notes just like they're buying cars and other assets. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call a car an asset. But just items that are way overpriced. And people are paying too much money. And for the future of my money, my fiduciary responsibility to my household,
yes,
I don't need to do that. I don't mind paying a fair amount for a note. And again, that depends on what the note is. I don't mind paying a fair amount, but I don't want to feel like I'm overpaying either.
But I think people get stuck on seeing, oh, Joe, Bob, Sally, Mary, they bought deals last week. I didn't buy anything. Right. And feeling the need to buy. And I always remind them, if you went back to 2005 and you had cash in the bank, would you have told your now 2005 person to hold the money and wait for the crash or jump in there and go get that rental property that was zero money down?
Right.
It's that same mentality as just because someone bought 14 assets last didn't mean that they bought it a good deal.
Right. Just
buying a deal, you want to buy good deals. You don't want to buy deals.
Don't FOMO into investments.
Yeah.
That's the thing people get. That's the worst thing is people tend to FOMO into investing. And it's easy to do. It takes discipline to not do that, actually. It takes discipline to come up with a plan. Hey, this is my buy box, and I'm sticking with my buy box. And eventually, I will find an asset that will meet my buy box. Mm. Now, Eddie has accused me of having too tight of a filter. And I think in the beginning I did. I had too tight of a filter. I lean a little more conservative with my filtering. And for me, I think that's better than being a little more the other way. You know, so I kind of always look at something and say, okay, am I being too tight with my filtering? Do I need to loosen my filtering up a little bit? And if so, we'll go from there.
Yeah.
I'm with you, man. We're conservative as well, right? I don't need to buy 1,000 deals, right? Mm-hmm. I want to buy as many good deals that fits my budget and fits my numbers as possible.
Yeah.
I don't care if someone overpaid. That's not my problem. Right. Maybe they overpaid. They knew something I didn't know, which makes them not. But I'm not going to be in a spot where someone to say, you know, one of the biggest things I got from hedge funds, like, well, it's been performing for 12 months. And I say, then put a guarantee that the thing will continue to perform. If you can't put a guarantee on there, doesn't mean it's going to continue to perform. So I have no problem saying, this is my numbers. I ran numbers. If you want to see them? Great. But I can't bid above where someone else is because they're probably missing something that we've done 13, 14 years of this business. And we've seen people forget taxes, you know, due diligence on just back taxes and liens. And, you know, they buy a property, do a deed in lieu, kind of find out there's a second lien on it and you can't do it cleanly. There's a lot of little things that you learn along the way that I think newer people just don't know about. And there's things we don't know about still that we're still learning about.
But then that goes back to the network.
Because the network.
You come 100%. Across something that you've not seen that you don't know, because let's face it, you guys have been in the business for years and you still don't know everything.
No.
You still haven't seen everything.
Nope.
But you have a network.
Yes.
You reach out to that network and you use that network to help you with your due diligence to figure out things.
Exactly.
That's the power of having a network.
And sometimes someone is brand new may have a skill set because they do a W-2 job. Maybe they're an attorney on their W-2 job. Mm-hmm. They have a skill set that can help you, even though they don't know any about notes.
Right. So, or they're working at a title company.
Yeah.
How
can I be, you know, I love when people say, well, I'm marketing. Whoa, totally different world, but you can definitely apply to here and do great jobs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, Wayne, we put your information on how they get a hold of you in the chat. So don't worry about that. Will people be seeing you at Ode Expo? And do you know what you're talking about yet?
I am going to be at Ode Expo. I'm not going to be on the stage this year. So no speeches from me. I'm going to be there as an attendee. But hey, if you see me at Ode Expo, come up to me. Let's have a conversation. Let's make a connection. I'm always looking. Oh, I wanted to leave with one extra
Please
thing.
Do.
I found this thing. I thought this was great. It was very applicable. So imagine playing Monopoly and never buying any assets or investments that generate income. Imagine you just went around collecting $200 and giving your money to the rich, which the other players on the board, mm-hmm. and trying to stay out of jail. Mm-hmm. That is how most people live.
Rat race.
And that's how I used to live. You know, we bought that game from Robert Kiyosaki. He's got
Rat Race. Yeah. It's expensive for a board game, but it's great.
We've got my son playing that game.
Yeah.
We're teaching our son. He's 11 years old, and we're teaching him.
I think I even have it in here. It's probably about 10 feet behind me. That's
awesome. It's like, don't be part of the rat race. That's I'm teaching him now to be an entrepreneur and to think differently so that he can have a different future and come up differently than I was raised.
And that's something we should actually bring up in the groups or social groups is like, how are you helping your kids, you know, learn the space? We're boring, right? We do numbers and crunching and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But having our kids get involved in just the theory is important. I completely agree with you.
You know, one of the funniest things that happened to him in that game. So they have all these cards that come up, right? And different cards that you pulled.
Yep.
Well, he pulled a card that was a divorce card. And he wiped him out, and he's like, well, I don't like divorce, this sucks. And I'm like, where me and my wife are like, exactly, you don't want to go divorce, wipe you out.
Yeah,
so he learned that at just a very young age.
Date smart.
I love that game.
Yeah it's great. Good. Awesome. So when we'll be seeing you soon, right? Yeah. It's awesome to have you on here. Feel free to check a look at his posts on LinkedIn and all stuff, Facebook. Just tune in and listen to him. He has some great, valuable information. If you have any questions regarding him, there's a link in the chat. Please do that. If you have any questions for me and Nathan, you know how to reach us. Wayne, hang out for after hours and take care, everyone. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks so much, everybody.